You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
Here's something I expect to see more of in the next year or so. Mississippi passed an abortion ban, banning abortions after 15 weeks. It was struck down by a judge because it's clearly currently unconstitutional. So Mississippi turned around and passed a six-week abortion ban and then had to face the same judge who made it very clear he's going to strike this one down too and ask Mississippi what's next. A two-week abortion ban? Shitty states doing shitty things. That's not what I'm referring to when I say expect to see more of this in the next year or so. I am referring to Mississippi House Representative Doug McLeod, who was arrested in his home this week after punching his wife in the face for failing, in Doug's estimation, to disrobe quickly enough so that he could have sex with her. Doug McLeod, of course, is one of the sponsors of Mississippi's six-week abortion ban. So anybody out there who tells you that this isn't about controlling women or feeling entitled to women's bodies and being able to dictate their choices, that these abortion bans aren't misogynistic, that they aren't kind of disguised bank shot violence against women, might want to Google Doug McLeod and read all about the way this family values conservative, this crusader for family values, this person with such respect for the sanctity of human life and respect for women, which is why he says he endorsed the six-week ban, how he treats the women in his own life. I think we're going to see more violent misogynist assholes like Doug McLeod exposing themselves for who they actually are. One more thing about Doug McLeod, his other legislative achievements this session: loosening gun regulations, making it easier for people to buy and carry and conceal carry guns. And you know what correlates really strongly with mass shooting and gun violence, random gun violence? Domestic violence. If there's anyone in Mississippi who shouldn't have a gun right now or ever again, it's Doug McLeod. All right, coming up on today's show, on the micro edition of the Savage Lovecast, tons of your cues, lots of my A's. And on the magnum edition of the Savage Lovecast, Alex Andrews from Swap Behind Bars joins us to talk about sex work and talk about how you can help out incarcerated sex workers. All that coming up on today's show. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Everlane, luxury basic clothing and accessories made at ethical factories without those retail markups. For free shipping and to support the Lovecast, go to everlane.com/savage. Want to save money, save the planet, and look good while you're doing it? It doesn't get any better than Thread Up, the largest online consignment and thrift store. Shop over 35,000 brands at up to 90% off estimated retail. Go to threadup.com/savage for an extra 30% off your first order. That's threadup.com/savage. threadup.com/savage for an extra 30% off today. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Blue Apron. Check out this week's menu and get $60 off at blueapron.com/savage.
Hi, Dan. Midwestern, mid-20s, cis female here. I'm calling in regards to how do you make a relationship survive mental illnesses. My fiance will prioritize sleeping over literally anything. He uses it as an avoidance mechanism, and I don't really have an issue with it. I've told him that several times. I know that that's part of depression. I have depression too, so I literally do understand. But the thing is, because he sleeps so much, I end up being stuck with all of the responsibilities of adulthood between the two of us. I feel like I'm living the lives of two adults for him, and he's just existing at my side. Yeah, I don't know what to do.
Here's what you should do. You should break off your engagement. You don't have to break up with him. You don't have to move out, not yet. But you should break off the engagement because your boyfriend or your fiance isn't in good working order, doesn't have his shit together. Now, no one has all of their shit together, but we need to have kind of a majority of our shit together. We need to be functional adults before we enter into adult commitments like marriage. So I think you go to your boyfriend and you say, engagement off or wedding postponed into the distant future until you get it the help that you need and get the hell out of bed and stop shoving onto my plate all of the responsibilities of a shared life together, all the responsibilities of adulthood that people enter into long-term romantic committed relationships. So that burden is spread over two people and you have your own shit to deal with as an adult. And it's not fair for you to manipulate me into a corner where I feel like a terrible person because I want out of this relationship because it's not making me happy. We're not better together if I'm enabling you never to get the fuck out of bed and not to work on getting your shit together. So you're going to get the fuck out of bed. You're going to start to get your shit together. You're going to get out there and get the help you need to deal with or treat your depression, or it's over. At least until you do have your shit together. Then perhaps down the road, we can reconnect. But right now, this ain't working. So right now, this is off.
Hi, Dan. I had a question about men's erections. My husband and I have been together for 3 years, and we have a great sex life. I certainly have no complaints. But a lot of times he does come kind of early, before I have. And so most often he will just sort of keep going. But doesn't that hurt? I always thought it like was quite uncomfortable for a guy to do that. And I don't want him making himself uncomfortable on my behalf. You know, there's lots of other ways that he could get me off. But I did ask him about it once and he sort of said no, but it was pretty non-committal. And I know for me, like once I've climaxed, it's very uncomfortable, like almost to the point of being painful if there's like any stimulation there again. So I was just wondering if you could shed some light on that, because I really don't want him to be, you know, causing himself any pain on my behalf.
There's a kink called apple polishing, and it basically consists of some guy has just come and you continue to not stroke him. You continue to apply really direct and intense stimulation to the glands of his penis, to the head of his cock, and it is unbearable. Guys thrash and scream. There are videos. You can go online and find them if you care to. But here's the thing. In a moment or two, the intensity, the nerve endings being so fucking fried, passes and the dude still has an erection. It is possible to come and to just breathe through that moment of hypersensitive nerve endings and then continue to fuck. And it's not painful. It doesn't cause a guy any discomfort. I would point you to other forms of pornography out there. Get online. Watch yourself some gay pornography. You will see a lot of videos where a guy comes, often on the outside of his male partner's body, often around his butt, waits a second, and then sticks his dick back in and continues to fuck the bottom until the bottom comes. It's not unbearable. It's not painful. You should take your husband's word for it when he tells you that it's not uncomfortable for him. I imagine that what he's doing after he comes is he's pausing and staying still inside you after he comes until that supercharged, intense, head of the penis on fire feeling subsides, and then he begins to fuck you again. And it's not torture for him, and it doesn't make him uncomfortable. So take yes for an answer. And this is a conversation that you should be able to have with your husband of 3 years and your sex partner about what works for him and works for you. And you should both be able to acknowledge that perhaps your bodies function a little bit differently. Stimulation after orgasm, perhaps for a longer period of time, is uncomfortable and unpleasant for you. Stimulation after orgasm, soon after orgasm, not uncomfortable or painful for him. You will just have to take his word for it when he dicks you down and then continues to dick you down after his orgasm. But if his word alone won't suffice, go watch some gay pornography. Now that summer is creeping up on us, I feel like all the other seasons were just prep for the very serious cooking I'm going to get down to this summer. And this newfound enthusiasm is, of course, due to Blue Apron. This season, experience the joy of cooking something new and trying and learning new-to-you techniques, stuff that makes cooking fun. For most of my adult life, pathetically, and I'm embarrassed to admit, for most of my adult life, I couldn't cook a thing. Toast and a bowl of cereal was about the extent of my kitchen ability. But thanks to Blue Apron and their step-by-step instructions, and thanks to Blue Apron for providing every single thing you need to whip together a great meal, I've learned how to cook. And that learning about the techniques thing that we mentioned, that's real. You learn these cooking techniques that then you apply even when you're not preparing a Blue Apron meal. You really learn these skills and find yourself, Blue Apron or no Blue Apron, whipping up a terrific dinner for yourself or your family on your own. Always helps though to have that big box of Blue Apron ingredients on the counter when you're doing it, because then everything you need is right at your fingertips. But again, those skills, those techniques you learn, they're with you forever, which is why I now kind of love cooking. Blue Apron exposed me to delicious recipes I wouldn't have thought to try and couldn't have made on my own and wouldn't have been able to make just reading them out of a dry old recipe book. With Blue Apron, the hardest parts are done for me. Cooking isn't a burden anymore. In fact, it's fun to learn these new kitchen skills with each meal. Because of my hectic schedule, I've often felt like I had no other choice than to go eat out more than I should. But with Blue Apron, I actually have time to cook a delicious, wholesome meal instead of relying so much on takeout. Blue Apron chef-designed recipes include amazing specialty sauces and premium ingredient blends that would otherwise be difficult, expensive, or time-consuming to source or make. The Test Kitchen's whole goal is to make dinner more accessible, more exciting, and more delicious. And I like that they offer a ton of vegetarian options. We go vegetarian half the week. To start making delicious, brag-worthy meals at home without the hassle, try Blue Apron. Check out this week's menu and get $60 off when you visit blueapron.com/savage. That's blueapron.com/savage. Blue Apron. They like to say a better way to cook. I like to say the only way I've ever cooked.
Hi, Dan. So I started attending SLAW, Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous, after doing some CODA recovery. And I don't perceive myself as a sex addict. I definitely identify with the love addict components, but I'm having a really hard time because I really love what the 12 steps can do for, self-care and for self-help, for, regulating yourself and whatever. But I don't think it's right to say that sex is always an addiction just because you use it for fun. Like in the SLAW manual, it said, we sought out sex because, our bodies were like corpses and we needed a cattle prod of electricity. And that metaphor really disturbed me. Like, we're humans. Like, we all enjoy sex. It's all, whether it's with the love of your life or a one night stand, right? The reason why you do it is because you want it. So I don't know if I'm agreeing with this language of like, oh, just anytime it's like sex shaming, but at the same time, I appreciate the love. I know it's take what you want, leave the rest, but like, it's really fucking with my head and with my sexuality.
Unless you've been ordered by a court to attend Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous meetings, you don't have to continue to attend these bullshit meetings that are making you unhappy. Yeah, that shit in the manual, it's garbage. People sometimes have sex for the wrong reasons, just like people sometimes have dinner for the wrong reasons, get married for the wrong reasons. People who are damaged will reach for something, some nearby tool, something that they can beat themselves up with. And for some people, that is sex. But that's not about an addiction to sex. That's about an underlying issue. But that's not about addiction to sex. And all of these things you've read about dopamines and love hormones and people becoming addicted to them, it's crap, because the same hormones and dopamine and natural oxycontins are released by our brains when we play video games, when we see the faces of our children, and we don't talk about addiction. Well, we talk about addiction to video games. We don't talk about being addicted to looking at our children's fucking faces. Walk the fuck away from this organization. And yeah, it is deeply sex negative. We are a sensation and variety seeking species, but we only pathologize it in our sex negative, sex shaming culture when a boner or a wet spot comes attached to it. People jump out of airplanes. People go bungee jumping. People go downhill slalom skiing. People see movies for vicarious thrills, to make themselves feel alive, to get that jolt of electricity. And no one has a problem with it until somebody has an erection or some woman is all wet. Then we have a problem with it. Not because we have a problem with that kind of adrenaline, get that shit pumping move. We don't have a problem with it. Unless sex is involved, then suddenly it's a huge problem. I think it's partly a huge problem because we all have watched a friend or a loved one blow their lives up with their dicks or their pussies. People can do that. And we hear about sex, when people have a lot of it or it's super adventurous, when it blows someone's life up. Because if somebody is doing it in a reasonable, rational way and they're not out of control, even if sometimes they're doing the sexual equivalent of bungee jumping or skydiving, if it doesn't blow up their life, we don't hear about their sexual adventures and experiences, because why would we, unless we're their confidant? So we tend to associate sexual thrill seeking with self-destruction, because that's when we hear about it. And because we're steeped in a sex negative culture, confirmation bias comes into play, and we go, look, sex is dangerous, sex is addictive. All that said, why are you going to these fucking stupid meetings? If you know what they're saying is bullshit and it's making you miserable and negatively impacting your sex life, what kind of masochism is that? Used clothing stores are a fantastic way to reduce waste in this country, and you can find some amazing deals, but actually going into them can be unpleasant sometimes. That's why I am psyched about ThredUp. With ThredUp, you save money, you save the planet, you get some sweet threads, all from the comfort of your own computer. ThredUp is the largest online consignment and thrift store where you can shop high-quality pieces for up to 90% off estimated retail. They have over 35,000 brands ranging from Gap to Gucci. You can find a Coach purse for $10, Anthropology dress for $6, and a Lululemon tank for $10. Plus, if you go to ThredUp.com/savage today, you'll get an extra 30% off your first order. So make it a big one. Instead of digging through clothing racks, ThredUp provides the comfort of shopping online with the insane deals of thrifting. It's super easy and fun to shop. You can save your sizes and favorite brands and filter for exactly what you want, exactly the brands and labels you want, exactly what you're looking for. They have so many cute things and add thousands of new items every day. Look good and do good this year with ThredUp. Go to ThredUp.com/savage again for that extra 30% your first order. That's ThredUp.com/savage. ThredUp.com/savage for an extra 30% off today. Terms apply.
Hi, Dan and Nancy. Dan, I have a question for you regarding these recent state anti-abortion laws being passed in places like Georgia and Alabama that are so ridiculously restrictive that even people like Pat Robertson are saying they go too far. And, you know, as a lot of us probably already know, this is obviously a strategy to get them challenged in court so that eventually it can get up to the Supreme Court, which opens up Roe v. Wade to be challenged again at a time when the Supreme Court is stacked with GOP toadies. Well, you almost have to grudgingly admire the strategy going on here on the other side. But in the name of acting strategically in response, what would happen if they didn't make those challenges? What if the ACLU and Planned Parenthood stood down and let the laws stick? These are laws that I can assume most people, even in those states, don't really want, at least not in that form. I can't imagine even in Alabama, a majority of people think it's just that a doctor can be put in jail for giving an 11-year-old rape victim an abortion. So what if these states are allowed to have these laws on the books and reap the repercussions? The actors who are already saying they won't film movies there, companies that won't open factories there, move their head offices, and organizations won't have their conventions there as long as these laws stand. Why don't we let ostracism and scorn and ridicule get rid of these laws instead of playing patsy to this strategy that could see Roe v. Wade overturned, which I suspect most people listening think would be a horrible thing to have happen. So I don't know if somebody's thought about this already or if it's a bad idea for some reason. It can't be a worse idea than gay Israel, and you played that guy's call. So I'd love to hear what you think about this.
You know, for a very long time, Republicans, anti-choice Republicans, also known as all Republicans since Christine Todd Whitman rode off into the sunset, Google her, kids, have had the luxury of advocating for a deeply unpopular position on abortion, banning abortion, a human life amendment, because they knew that the Supreme Court wasn't going to allow that to happen. And so they could demagogue about this issue and press for it without real consequence at the ballot box. And liberals and progressives and Dems took it for granted that whatever the Republicans were doing or saying, the Supreme Court was the backstop that would prevent those policies from being enacted. So we didn't have to take the courts that seriously, that we could throw our vote away on a charlatan and a fraud like Jill Stein or Ralph Nader, because there really wasn't a difference between the Democrats and the Republicans and blah, blah, blah. Nothing really was at stake. And if a Democrat like a Hillary Clinton running for president said, you know, think about justices on the Supreme Court, who's going to be appointing them and what those consequences might be if it's Donald Trump appointing them, people shouted her down for fear-mongering. She got yelled at. She got dragged for pointing to the court and saying that's something you might want to take into consideration as you head to the ballot box. Maybe she was mongering legitimate fucking fears, stuff we should have been goddamn thinking about and goddamn afraid of, because here we are. Anyway, I'm far afield from your question. I don't think your idea is as ridiculous as gay Israel or reparations for cocksuckers like me. Please send me $10 via PayPal. Every blowjob I gave so I can retire. Your question is basically, you know, the GOP is the dog that's been chasing the car. Well, what if we let the dog catch the car? What then? Suddenly they will, a lot of conservative commentators believe, a lot of political pundits believe, they will pay an electoral price that they haven't in the past. There's a map circulating on the internet that shows the states where support for legal abortion is over 50%. And you know what? It's every single fucking state, including the state of Alabama, including Georgia, including Missouri, including Ohio. Every state that's enacted one of these terrible bans on abortion, in the case of Alabama, without an exception for rape or incest, abortion enjoys majority support, but the majority has been able to set aside their support for abortion and vote other issues in those races because nothing was going to happen, because abortion wasn't going to be banned, because the Supreme Court wasn't going to allow it. Well, here we are with a Supreme Court that is highly likely to allow it. Do we let the fucking Republican dog catch the anti-choice car and then let him pay the price? So do we stop opposing these bills? Do we stop trying to block them? Do we let them go into effect? Well, I think that makes a kind of intellectual sense. I think that's satisfying on some level emotionally to contemplate. But in reality, the sooner these laws go into effect, the sooner women die. The sooner these laws go into effect, the sooner women will be prosecuted and their doctors will be thrown into prison for providing them with healthcare, aka abortion services. So I do think we have to fight these laws with everything that we can. And I think we have to get stays and injunctions to prevent them from going into effect, to save the lives in the short term of the women who will otherwise die or be prosecuted, to keep out of jail doctors who will otherwise be prosecuted and imprisoned if these laws go into effect. And if they catch the fucking car, if the Supreme Court overturns Roe at the request of Alabama, well, then they've caught the car. And if we can delay them catching the car for a couple of years, that's going to be better in the short run for the women of Alabama. And the electoral price that Republicans will pay if Roe is overturned, if they fucking catch that car, they will pay that price. That bill will come due in time. Would you buy a t-shirt for $50 if you knew it only cost $7 to make? Hell no. And with Everlane, you never overpay for quality clothes. Everlane only makes premium essentials using the finest materials without traditional markups. They want you to know what you've been paying for and why, so they tell you their real costs, and they are radically transparent about every step in their process, from the materials they use to the ethical factories they work with. Everlane's clothes look better, cost less, and last longer, and because Everlane sells directly to you, their prices are 30 to 50% lower than traditional retailers. Essentials like their Cotton Crew t-shirt are exactly what they should be. Simple, stylish, and made from quality materials. Men should check out their quality cotton basics, premium Japanese denim, the perfectly fit Oxford shirts, and outerwear made from recycled water bottles. Nancy loves this. Recycle those water bottles, people. Make gorgeous clothes out of them, of course. Nancy also loves their shoes. So right now you can check out our personalized collection at everlane.com/savage. Plus you'll get free shipping on your first order. That's everlane.com/savage. Everlane.com/savage.
Hi, Dan and the Tech Savvy at Risk Youth. I am from the Midwest in my mid-20s, and I'm calling because I have a younger cousin who's about 13 years old, and she is obviously on social media, so she's been using Instagram, and I
went to her story today and pulled it up just to see what's up. And I noticed that it was this image that says in bold lettering, no one should be okay with killing babies over and over and over again. A lot of my friends have been posting on Instagram, men shouldn't be making laws about women's bodies. And I am on that boat, absolutely. And so when I saw this, it made me kind of sad because we come from a Catholic family. And, you know, I know that her mom is very pro-choice. And, you know, I feel like she might only be getting one perspective at this point in her life. And so I kind of was just curious if you have any advice, if you would reach out to her and say anything, or if you would just stay out of it. If you have any advice, if you would say anything, I would love to hear it.
You should definitely say something. If your cousin is old enough to be sharing her political opinions online, she's old enough to encounter people, maybe people she's related to, maybe people she knows and likes, whose opinions she will take into consideration, to encounter those people and to hear back from those people. Instagram, when you're delivering political messages on Instagram or Twitter or Facebook or anywhere else, it's not a one-way street or a one-way megaphone. Is a one-way megaphone a thing? It's not. You're going to hear back and get pushback from people. And I think it's important that you speak up. You can start with, no one's killing babies. We're talking about allowing women to make their own choice about terminating a pregnancy, about aborting a fetus, which is not an infant, which is not a baby. There is a difference and a distinction. And then engage with her. Hear her out. Let her say what she wants to say. Catholics are likelier to support choice than evangelical Christians. And Catholic women are just as likely, according to a study that came out in 2018, to get an abortion as any other woman in America. So don't assume that just because her mom is Catholic and you said pro-choice about her mom. I believe you meant to say pro no choice, pro forced birth, but don't assume just because her mom opposes abortion because of her Catholicism that your cousin can't come around on this issue, or that even her mother couldn't come around on this issue. But nobody comes around on an issue unless they're forced to think about it. And a 13-year-old, I promise you, hasn't given this much thought. So, give her a little food for thought. Give your cousin a little food for thought. She might blow up. She might get angry at you. She might reject everything that you have to say. But I promise you, even if she doesn't come around instantly, you could plant a seed that brings her around eventually.
Dan Savage, hi. Big fan. Got all the books and everything. Never called, but had to because big dilemma. So there's this girl that I really like. So 4 months I've been seeing her. About a month into it, she says, it's not you, it's me. So we didn't see each other for like a week. She comes back a week later and tells me, I changed my mind. I want to be with you, blah, blah, blah. The next morning, because she stayed the night, we didn't have sex. We still haven't had sex. But she stayed the night. The next morning, she took like a couple hundred dollars out of my wallet and just left. Like a dummy, I let her back in the house. She apologized. We hung out again. We got a hotel room for 3 nights. I even bought her parents a hotel room because they got some living situation problems. I did a lot of stuff for her. And still yet, she has not had sex with me. So the shitty thing is after 3 nights in the hotel room with no sex, we were supposed to go on a date. She didn't show up. So I walked to her ex-boyfriend's house, and sure enough, she was there. And he says they were fucking. So she's not fucking me, but she's fucking him. But she still wants to come over all the time. I mean, it could be just because she wants to do my drugs and, like, I give her, like, $5 or $10 here and there. I don't know. But, like, I need to be able to tell her, like, listen, first of all, if anything, I deserve some booty by now. Because we're talking about, you know, thousands of dollars worth of marijuana and fucking money alone. And heartache. So, I don't know. Maybe you could help me out.
She's never going to fuck you. Ever. Actually, I take that back. She might fuck you if you say to her, look, if you want to keep coming over here, if you want to keep using my drugs, if you want me to treat you to future weekends and hotels, I have to have some booty. You might get some booty then. But at what cost? She will feel entitled to more of your drugs, to lifting more of your money from your wallet while you're asleep, to taking more advantage of you than she already has. Dude, she doesn't want to fuck you. She's using you. And you're allowing her to use you because you want to get in her pants, and that is making you stupid. You are engaged in some very serious dickful thinking here. That's why you're letting this thief and mooch back into your apartment and back into your life over and over and over again. If you want a commodified relationship, I give you this amount of money, I give you this amount of drugs, you give me this amount of booty, get an honest sex worker as opposed to the dishonest grifter that you're hanging out with now. Block her number, change your locks, don't see her again, don't give her any more drugs, don't give her any more fucking money. Cut her out of your life. You're being used. You're a mark. You're not a potential future boyfriend who gets booty. You're a mark and a fool that she is going to continue to take advantage of so long as you let her. And you need to rip it out of your head. Reach into that motherboard, pull out those circuits that tell you that you are entitled to sex from this woman or any other woman. Of course, if you meet up with an honest sex worker and offer her a certain amount of money in exchange for a certain kind of sexual attention or sexual indulgence, you have a right to expect that then. But that's an honest exchange. You don't have a right to sex from someone just because you bought him dinner, just because you took him to a hotel for a weekend, just because you got him high. You are not entitled to sex under those circumstances. And if you meet a sex worker and you provide her with a certain amount of money, even then, you're not entirely entitled to sex. If you do something creepy or weird, the sex worker can withdraw her consent and leave. So you got to be a decent, respectful dude. I don't want to come down on you too hard. You are the person being taken advantage of in this situation. You're the person allowing yourself to be taken advantage of. But one of the reasons that she's been able to take advantage of you is this idea that you have in your head that you're entitled to sex after a certain amount of pot, money, dinner, hotel, blah, blah, blah. That's allowed her to leverage. She's using that as leverage to continue to take from you because you're living in false hope that that entitles you to sex when it doesn't.
Hi, Dan. Quick question for you. So 2 weeks ago, I had an amazing Tinder date with a guy, and it ended up turning into like a 4-day back-to-back sleepover, hangout, talk, cuddle, amazing sex. Awesome experience. He lives in northern Canada and I live in Arizona, and we both discussed that, you know, we most likely won't see each other again and aren't ready for a relationship. So that's fine. I feel good about that. But I just found out this morning that I'm pregnant, and I'm in shock, first of all, but my first thought was, how do I tell this guy? Because first of all, he doesn't want kids. He told me that. Second of all, we don't really have an ongoing relationship. And third of all, I'm afraid of his reaction. I think that he'll be mad, even though he participated in being irresponsible sexually with me. And I think that he'll just beg me to get an abortion. And I don't want to do that. I 100% want to keep it. I just don't know how long to wait because I feel like it's too early. I'm like maybe 2 weeks pregnant at this point. How long do I wait? And when the time comes, how do I tell him? I don't really expect him to be around, but I just don't know how guilty I should feel for basically saying, I accidentally got pregnant with your child and I'm keeping it no matter what you say. I don't know what to do. I don't know what I can expect from him out of this, like responsibility wise. I don't know how to prepare myself emotionally for his reaction.
You have an absolute right to have this baby if that's what you decide to do. It's your body and it's your choice. You can't control how he's going to feel about this. And you sound tense about telling him for fear of the negative reaction that you are going to get. He is not going to be pleased about this news. As you know, he told you that he has no interest in being a parent ever. Something he should have thought about before he blew loads inside you. You two had unprotected sex. You say that you chose to take risks together in the moment. And when he went ahead and blew those loads in you. You two didn't use condoms and you were on no other form of birth control and he didn't do his screw diligence and you didn't do yours either. He ceded his right to dictate the outcome if indeed you got pregnant. And you did. And you're keeping it. And that's non-negotiable. So you will inform him that he is biologically, at least, and perhaps financially, gonna be a father. There's nothing that you can say that's going to make that news welcome. There's nothing that you can say that's going to make him happy to learn that he is going to be a father. Most likely, you say you're only 2 weeks pregnant or 2 weeks overdue. Plenty of people are a few weeks late, have that period. Many, many people spontaneously miscarry. Not crossing my fingers or anything. These are just facts. So I wouldn't call him right now and tell him. I would wait a month or two until you're certain that you are pregnant and then let him know. And guys, telling a woman that you're having unprotected sex with, that you aren't interested in being a father, is not a form of birth control. Physically, cosmically, not a form of birth control. It's not going to prevent you from becoming a parent if the obvious thing that might happen happens. If you really don't want to be someone's daddy, if you really don't want that decision taken out of your hands, get a vasectomy. Be vigilant about condoms. Be careful about where and when and in whom you blow those loads. You have to think about that shit in advance. Because after you've knocked up some Tinder date after a four-day sexcapade, it's too late. It's not your decision to make anymore, fellas. And finally, I'm not going to tell you to get an abortion. I'll let him do that when you call him. But I don't understand why you wouldn't want to get an abortion. I don't understand why anyone would want to parent, even from afar, with a person who had no desire to be a parent and maybe angry about that fact that they're a parent. Not against their will. He participated, but angry about the fact that they are a parent for the rest of their lives. It doesn't seem like an ideal parenting circumstance, but it is your choice, ultimately, to make, as was the unprotected sex that you chose to have with him and that he chose to have with you. A lot of choices happened in advance of the choice you're making now.
Hi, Dan. I'm so glad that you want wedding questions, because I'll just go ahead and put you on speed dial from now on. So my current problem has to do with my guest list. We are a 50-person wedding, and we've invited 63. More than half of those are my extended family, and we fully expect for a lot of them to not come so we can get that number down to 50, and then we can save money on catering by having a buffet versus a plated dinner. So the problem came last week when my mother-in-law, she found out that two people that she invited couldn't come to the wedding, so she asked to replace it with two more people. I didn't see a problem, told my mom about it, and my mom lost her shit because my mother-in-law was inviting a family friend, or a friend, not family, and my mom lost her head and was like, we're not inviting our friends, and blah, 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 started attacking my mother-in-law. And the real bitch of this is that we only have seven of our friends coming total, three and four respectively, and I just don't know how to navigate these arguments. We still don't know what the numbers are going to be for who's paying what, because that was on my fiance's to-do list to ask his mom about, probably like the day after the wedding, and he still hasn't done it. So do you have any advice for navigating this one?
The day after the wedding seems like terrible timing, a terrible time to ask your mother-in-law how much money she's going to kick in to pay for the wedding you already had. Also, asking your in-laws to subsidize or finance your wedding is just a terrible idea generally. You should have the wedding that you can afford. And if that means a potluck in somebody's house and a wedding in the garden, then you have a potluck at somebody's house and a wedding in the garden. If you ask your parents to contribute financially to your wedding to pay for it, they believe they should have some modicum of control over it. So yeah, anyway, a wedding question. I observed a couple of weeks ago that I don't get many wedding questions, and apparently making that observation, saying that out loud, opened the wedding question floodgates. And here we go. tell your mother-in-law that she can invite a couple of friends. Remind your mother-in-law that you invited more people than you can accommodate. And so you were counting on some of the guests falling away. And so she can't replace everyone who's been invited with some other friend of hers, because then there's going to be more people at the wedding than you can afford to feed. But let your mother-in-law invite the two people she's already invited and say to your mother, okay, you get two people, just like mom-in-law got two people. You can invite two friends. She invited two friends. No more fucking friends. And then remind both that you're counting on not everyone that you invited being able to make it to the wedding. And so no more invites will be going out, and no new people will be contacted who weren't in the initial batch of invites. And if your mom and your future mother-in-law continue to have these kinds of fits, push back hard. Tell them it's your wedding. You get to determine who's on the guest list, and it's done. And no more names will be added after the to your friends, period, the end. It'll be easier, of course, to assert yourself in this way if you are paying for your own fucking wedding and not asking mom or mom-in-law to kick in.
Hi, Dan. This is a 30-year-old cis gay Jew. I'm calling because I'm getting married in a month. I sent out my invitations a while ago, including to some friends I've had for 7 years. I was at their wedding. We're close, so I invited them to our wedding. They sent me back an RSVP declining, and they wrote us a long letter that they enclosed where they talk about how they love us, and then they quoted the Bible, and then they wrote, "You might wonder why we are telling you this. We are sharing this, the gospel, which literally means good news, because we love you both. We believe that this is the key to life on earth and life after earth. To be silent about it is to suggest that we don't love you enough to tell you what we think is the truth. Honestly, we have been silent for too long, and we are sorry for that, but we do love you. Because we believe this, we also accept the Bible as an authoritative text in our lives. It is evident from God's design for marriage that it should be shared between a man and a woman. It is hard for us to accept this sometimes because we know that it is hurtful to others. We imagine that it is hurtful to you both. But though we don't understand everything, we do believe that God is bigger than what we can understand, and we trust him. We do want to be clear and say that we are not against your right to get married. We support that. We just don't feel right celebrating it because of our faith. So it is with heavy hearts that we have to decline your invitation. We hope you can see that we love you both so much, and we do wish you a life full of true and authentic joy. We hope to continue to support you in friendship and come visit soon. If you want to talk more about any of this, please give us a call." So I can no longer be friends with these people, and needless to say, they will not be welcome to visit us. I want to reply and tell them that I'm hurt and that I disagree with this, and if they truly still wanted to be friends, they should have said nothing. I want to change their minds, but I know I probably can't. What should I say to let them know this is not okay? Is there a scripture I can quote as to how this anti-gay biblical sentiment is invalid? Do I say that us being friends in the first place under false pretenses was dishonest on their part? Do I take them up on their offer to call and talk about it? Please help.
They do not love you. They never did, these friends of 7 years you've just discovered. Never really loved you. Love their imaginary friend and their interpretation of a large, complex, contradictory, self-negating book more than they love living, breathing human beings standing in front of them. And you could, if you wanted to, toss the first and greatest commandment in their faces. Jesus said the first commandment is to love thy neighbor as thyself, and they certainly showed up for their own fucking weddings, and so they should show up for your fucking wedding if they truly loved you. I don't think you should have any further contact with these people. You can send them, if you care to, Matthew Vine's terrific book, God and the Gay Christian. Maybe that'll open your eyes. But their invitation to have a dialogue is just asking you to show up on the phone or in person to be further bullied, to be proselytized at. And I don't think you should give them that opportunity to love you in this abusive, horrifying, ass-holy way. And I think you should ask for the toaster, or whatever the fuck you guys got them for their wedding. Ask for that toaster back. If they felt this way about gay people and about gay love, inviting gay couples to their wedding to celebrate their marriage, yeah, that was an asshole head fake of a move. And this not against your right to marry, just not going to celebrate. That's like telling someone, "I don't oppose you having a birthday. I just don't want to celebrate your birth." Yeah, no more contact with these assholes. No more opportunities for them to be jerks to you. Block them. If you want to, send them Matthew Vine's terrific book and enclose a short card that says, "Fuck you both." All right, before we get to your response calls, let's look to the tweets. Ellie tweets, "Thank you, Fake Dan Savage, for talking about Romania and abortion I grew up there. I grew up hearing stories of my mom's university classmates' illegal abortions. Some did not survive. Romanian women learned the hard way. Ellie added, if listeners want a glimpse into the horror of what women went through in Romania, watch 4 months, 3 weeks, and 2 days, a Romanian movie about those days. Americans should watch it and see what they're headed toward. Kaji Annihilatrix tweets, as much as the guys at work hassle me for listening to the Savage Lovecast all day, I know they're taking mental notes. Thanks from me, and secretly from them too, at Fake Dan Savage. You're welcome, Kaji. And dudes, hassling Kaji. Stop hassling Kaji. And just relax and enjoy the podcast. No one's going to think you're gay if you enjoy a podcast that is 90% about straight people and straight sex. And finally, Unlucky Contender tweets, dear Savage Lovecast, how is it that the utmost best caller audio quality ever in podcast history was a woman recounting a poop emergency? I have it on good authority. Nancy tells me that that was because that caller didn't call it in on the phone. They recorded it on their computer and then emailed us that question, which you can do by recording yourself on your own phone and emailing it to us at voicemail@savagelovecast.com. And now your response calls, and I have to say, it was kind of weird that we didn't get any calls about that dude and his yoga class question. Actually, just kidding. We got billions of calls about the dude in the yoga class.
Hey, this is in response to the guy that called about the yoga class and, like, the female energy being so high in the room. I question if you actually take your yoga practice seriously, if you even know what the word namaste means, because it means the God in me sees the God in you, and yoga practice is supposed to be about focusing on yourself, not the other people in the room. So that said, you also said something about having respect for women and wanting to respect their space. Well, maybe you don't understand. Women are pretty intuitive, and if you're in there focusing on their physical appearance, what they're wearing and what energy they're putting in the room rather than focusing on yourself, then you're missing something and you're not actually like realizing that you're being a fucking creep.
I am a yoga instructor, and this is just a part of your journey in realizing that yoga is not here for your physical fitness, and it's not here for you to pick up women. You mentioned that yoga is kind of a sacred thing. It's not kind of a sacred thing. Yoga is a sacred thing. And in your journey, I'm glad that you're asking questions and not just blindly going all willy-nilly and trying to fuck chicks at your studio, because that's not what it's about.
You know, sometimes yoga reveals parts of myself to me that I maybe didn't realize was there, unpleasant parts of myself that I need to accept and let go of. I think that's what's happening for you here. You need to see, acknowledge, and accept that you're being a fucking creep, and this is not how you should look at women at all when you're in yoga class.
Yoga, more than any other group fitness activities, calls in people not just to benefit the body, but also the mind, also the heart. You don't know why somebody is coming into the studio. Somebody really might just need a safe space to breathe and move, and you do not want to interfere with that. But with that being said, if something comes up organically...
All right, we're going to have to wrap up the show because we're running out of internet. We're going to let the yoga kids continue to talk secretly offline about yoga class issues, but we got to wrap it up. 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Lovecast. If you'd like to record a question or a comment about yoga or anything else for a future show, give us a call, 206-302-2064. Keep your 1 minute wonder and S&M questions coming in. We're going to do a 1 minute wonder show. That's where the questions are a minute or less, and my answers are 2 minutes or less. And we're doing a whole show upcoming dedicated to your BDSM questions. Give us a buzz, 206-302-2064. Follow me on Twitter at FakeDanSavage. Follow Swap Behind Bars on Twitter at Swap Behind Bars. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech-savvy at-risk youth and Nancy. I'll be back at you next week with an installment of Savage Lovecast. Thanks for joining.